Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
He kōna e purangi tēnei nā te reo irirangi o Aotearoa.
Voice of Tangaroa is a collaboration between New Zealand Geographic and RNZ. Reporting for this series is public interest journalism funded through New Zealand On Air.
If you are going to eradicate an island and you just forget one rat, it's a failure. I take it personally as a failure.
I'm proud to say that I was part of this eradication program, and I would say, oh, I was there bait loading and cooking and removing of rats.
And I mean, the aim is that the whole habitat of Late can become better for all those birds, and you'll really start to just feel a density of species around you.
So we are finally finishing with our second application, looking towards the future.
Kia ora anō. Welcome back to Voice of Tangaroa. I'm Claire Kincannon, producer and presenter of Our Changing World. And today, for another bonus episode, I'm back with freelance science journalist Kate Evans, who's bringing us somewhere special.
Kia ora. Yes, today we're headed to a tropical Pacific island, Late, southwest of the Vava'u Island group in the Kingdom of Tonga. And if I say tropical island, what are you thinking?
Ooh, I'm picturing that classic image of palm trees kind of leaning out over a white sandy beach. You know, this beautiful coral reef and turquoise water, gently lapping waves. Maybe some kind of Pacific reggae floating on the breeze as I kick back with a fruit juice in hand.
Right, well, it's not exactly like that. Late is one big uninhabited volcano that stretches up from the seafloor with a crater at the top and a jagged, cliffy coastline of dark volcanic rock. And no one is lazing about here. I've joined a passionate team of Tongans, Kiwis and one very organised Frenchman for a hectic 2 days as they try to turn this island into the ultimate paradise for wildlife. Late may not be your dream island, but its isolation, its rich volcanic soils and its wide range of habitats make it a utopia for many of Tonga's native plants and animals. Except for the Polynesian rats, which hopped ashore from waka or sailing ships at some point in the last few hundred years and are causing trouble in paradise.
It's more than 9 p.m. We hear nothing here. We are in the middle of the Pacific. Should be a lot of shearwater. We have some shearwaters, but we can imagine some petrel species reproducing here. So, yes, it's all those species are very impacted by rats.
This is Baudouin Desmontiers, who works for the international NGO Island Conservation, and he's project manager for the planned rat eradication.
Here we have two threatened species on the red list of the IUCN, and one of these is the Tongan whistler, very singing birds, or this one is very rare here. I stay for 10 days in April to monitor them. I just saw three of them in 10 days. So yes, this bird has a beautiful voice, and it's a small bird with a small head, small cheeks. Of course, they are predated by rats.
This isn't Baudouin's first rodeo. He's been involved in several other pest control and eradication projects on islands across the Pacific and in the French subantarctic islands too. Of course, all the knowledge gained from previous successes or failures feeds into the next attempt. This project involves carpeting Late with toxic bait by dropping it from a helicopter. But first, they need to work out how much is needed.
You want each rat to have access to the bait, so you want bait on each rat territory. But the amount of bait we put on the ground is not much related, in fact, to the amount of rat you have. Of course, we are monitoring what is the overall density of rats on Latte. We look for that. But the most important is the non-target species that are bait consumers. And for this kind of tropical island, it's crabs. Mm-hmm. Land crabs, like hermit crabs, are not sensitive to the rodenticide, so they are not dying at all, but they consume a lot of bait, and more than the rat. So here, for instance, the information, the most important initially, and that we use to select the rate of bait we want on the ground, is the amount of land crabs and not the amount of rat.
For this project, they're using bradypicum, a poison that reduces the blood's ability to clot. It's not nice stuff, but it's effective for taking out rats, and it doesn't harm the island's native animals. They've tested this. They've worked it out at 12 kilograms of bait per hectare. They'll do two applications 3 weeks apart, where they spread pellets out evenly over every part of the island.
We have 1 month to change the tide. I don't know if we can say it like this. And just after, we just leave this place and remove one of the main threats that the human put on this island, and that is what is today the main threat on the biodiversity on this island.
A big goal, a tight window to get it done, a numerous foe, helicopters dropping things from the sky. This is shaping up to be a great action movie. What are the chances for our plucky band of heroes? Slim, tiny, rapidly diminishing?
No, they're actually quite good.
It's difficult each time, but it's absolutely feasible. And when you are looking rodents, the success rate is very huge. It's around like 70% of the success.
And that's the average success rate for all rodents. Mice are actually trickier. So when you focus in on rats, that rate can be above 90%.
When we invest and when we start a project of rat eradication, we don't think that, okay, we have half a chance of failure. No, if we do it correctly, we have a huge amount of chance that it's successful.
Helicopter pilot Davin Mudford shipped his chopper up from Tauranga to Tonga especially for this job. At 8 o'clock this morning, he brought the last of the crew over to Latte from Vavau.
So we're going to do a half a load to start with. And the reason we're doing that is for a calibration.
And then you just fly like straight lines?
Yep, dead straight.
Yeah. Yep. And with the bucket open, it just falls out?
It's on a spinner.
Okay. Spreads it around.
Spreads it around. So we're running a 45-metre swath. So the buckets are actually sewing at about 100 metres. So we're doing half overlap, what they call half overlap.
Okay. Yep. Oh yeah, so they chuck it out across 100 metres and then
And we just move over 45 metres. So on our last bait run, we worked off this coast here. So we change our angle. So if we end up with little gaps, the idea is we don't need, it does get filled in.
So the idea is we cover the entire island in bait.
And they do trial plots and that to count all our baits and to make sure I'm doing the job properly. And so after our first load, I'll stop. We'll do a download. And then the data off my GPS. And then every time I refuel, we'll do another download. And then Morgan sits there and checks it and has a look at it. And he can work out all the rates. So if we've got anything that's a little bit light.
Oh, he can work out like the rates of coverage for every square metre, basically.
Basically.
Yeah, wow.
Okay. Cool, we're going to get
in
into
the sky.
It.
Geospatial analyst Morgan Marshall is another Kiwi, one of three dock staff helping out on this project. The devil is in the detail, so every few runs, Davin lands and chucks a USB stick out the window at Morgan, who then uses the flight data to check that the bait is spread evenly and landing where it's supposed to. He's tucked away in a tent on the mountainside, sitting at a generator-powered laptop. A couple of hundred metres away, the bait loading crew are waiting for the chopper to return. They're wearing overalls, face masks and respirators to protect them from the bait dust.
So while he's flying around, the boys are getting the bags of bait out of these big green boxes.
Yep, so there's 362 kilos per box, or 16 bags. So we get them out and we open them, ready for the next load.
Got to open them all and then
So they're all ready to go. So all we got to do is pick them up and tip them into the bucket.
And how long are you supposed to have to tip them into the bucket?
As long as possible, but we want to be as quick as possible. It just speeds everything up. The helicopter's $65 a minute, so...
Is it?
We want to limit our loading times.
Totally. I should get you to say your name and your role in the operation as well.
Andrew Curtis. I'm ground crew at Heli A1 in Nautronga.
And what are you? What's your job here?
So I'm loadmaster. That's what they call me. So I take care of everything on the ground, keep the pilot happy, make the pilot look good.
Yeah.
The bags are full of poisoned rat wheat bix, pellets of wheat dyed a bright green that have the bradypicum in them. As I watch, the bait loaders work fast, pouring the heavy bags into the big green bucket dangling from the bottom of the helicopter. There are three Kiwis, Andy, bait supervisor Mark, and Jono, a volunteer, as well as four Tongans from the National Environment Department, Ota Ota, Vesi, Luisi, and Leo.
My name is Leo Faraosi from Tafahi in Ndobtapu, but I work for Department of Environment in Tongatapu Islands.
How did you end up on this mission?
Really do hire me for this kind of job because we already been here in Latte around 2 months ago. We have a survey for the birds and the rats and prepare stuff for the rat eradication.
And there are some, you were saying that there's some species here that are new to you.
Yeah. The crown dove is not found in my islands. Mm. Our crown dove is very beautiful. Yeah, they're walking around the crown. They didn't fly much. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's amazing.
Yeah. Are you into birds? Your thing?
Yeah. Mm. My island, a lot of birds there.
And how did you get into working in environment?
Okay. After when I finished my study at the USP, University of South Pacific, and I applied for the work. But I work for EIA, Environmental Impact Assessment in Tongatapu. We assess all development here in Tonga. But I enjoy this kind of job. I'm sure it's a hard work, but it's good for me. It's a good exercise.
And when the helicopter comes back now, what will you jump up and do?
Yeah, we do the bait loader. But this one is a full one, maybe 32 bags.
So you have to lift them up and...
Yeah, and lift it up and put in the bucket.
Yeah.
Yeah, I enjoyed it.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, the helicopter is coming now. Back to work.
The day and a half long operation unfolds like this, a non-stop cycle of bag prep, helicopter arrival, bucket fill, and bait drop. Throughout the day, Morgan continues to look at the GPS data from the helicopter. And out in the bush, there's a second check happening too.
We're most of the way up the volcano and kind of the scrubby, open, rocky area sort of around the top of the crater.
This is Sasha Roselli, who works for DOC in the National Predator Control Program.
There's sort of two aspects to this. Because the bait has recently been sown, we're looking to see what the coverage and spread of the bait is on the ground. So we've got these fixed plots set up and I'm counting how many baits has landed in them. There should be about 10 at the rate that we're sowing. And then once that's done, I am putting these little flags on the baits and then we're checking them every day for the next 7 days to see how quickly they are eaten by rats or crabs or anything else, just to make sure that there's enough bait in the environment.
Are you sort of ground truthing what Morgan's doing over in the
basically deep? Yeah, just giving us the confidence that what we're seeing on the GIS is actually what's happening on the ground. And if there's too many or too few, and because for the bait availability I only want 10 in my plot, so I will move the baits around after that for the second part of the study.
Oh, I don't get it.
I will count them as they've landed now, and then that's kind of done. And then for my bait availability, I move the baits around so I've got exactly 10 in my plot.
I see, because for the second part is like how much is they're eating.
And, yes, yeah. Okay. So it's easier if they just all start with 10.
How many plots are there?
There's 30. So there is 10 on this kind of open summit bit, and there's 10 down along the coast, and then there's 10 kind of spread in a transect up the track that's linking those two places.
Did you make it up to the top, like up to the crater? What is the island like?
It's amazing. Latte is 540 metres tall at its highest point, so twice as high as Rangitoto Island in the Hauraki Gulf, and similarly rugged. They're both very young, new volcanic islands. The crater wasn't too far above the worksite, but it was a bit of a scramble to get up there.
Right at the top. Wow. We're right at the edge of the crater. God, it's a long way down.
Once you get there, the view is incredible. We could see steam rising from another active volcano on the horizon, a humpback whale just off the shore, and there were graceful white-tailed tropic birds circling around and around in the crater.
Leo or someone would know the story better, but that's Home Reef, and it's a little volcano, and it just, like, appeared. I think it's really new. And you can kind of see it smoking.
Yeah, I've been watching it smoke.
Yeah, it's been coming and going. And then there's one further away again that Davin can see when he's in the helicopter. And that was smoking the other day as well.
Wow, it's so active, eh? So, yeah. Have you heard any... crazy. Is this one given any signs of being active?
There has been a smell of sulphur around on a few days, but we don't know whether that was from here or from Home Reef or from further afield at all. And there is up on the hill, kind of around towards to the right of the crater, there are some cracks in the ground that do feel a little bit warm. So we try to avoid them and kind of take a slightly different route.
Latte is roughly circular, about 6 kilometres in diameter. Sasha's sights are along one transect line that starts up here near the rocky crater and tracks straight down the mountain to the sea. It's a 5 or 6 hour return trip on foot, and she's done it every day for the last month.
It's embarrassingly not very far. It's only about 4 kilometres down to the coast, but it's pretty steep and it's not a very well cut track, so it takes probably an hour and a half. So for the monitoring, I head off in the morning and I basically walk down that track to the coast, checking all the baits on the way down, do a wee loop around the ones at the bottom, walk a couple of hours back up, and then come up the top and do these ones. So, yeah, it's not very many kilometres, but it does take an entire day.
But you are climbing, you know, up and down a volcano every day.
Yeah, we'll claim that. And sometimes it's really hot when the sun comes out. It's a bit of a slog back up the hill.
Yeah, it's not a desk job though.
No, and usually I do have a desk job, so it's been a little bit of a change.
Yeah,
it's been really nice to get back outside. I used to do more field work than I do now.
Okay.
But it's been a shock to the system, yeah.
Do you feel fit now?
No.
Still not?
No, it's still very difficult.
Further down, we enter the forest. It's suddenly shady. There are tangled vines, fallen logs.
It's not easy moving around in here.
It's home to lots of tropical birds I've never heard before. We can hear a few chirping away. But it could be louder.
What was that?
That was one wattled honeyeater and a shrill bill. I haven't heard the kingfisher yet.
This is Karen Stone of the Vava'u Environmental Protection Association, the sole environmental non-profit organisation in Tonga. And now we are on one of those picture-perfect white sand and coconut palms tropical islands.
Lots of guano on the ground. My feet are feeling very rich at the moment.
Sure, it's healthy, right?
It is very healthy.
We're on Whanua One'one, a tiny dot of land off Vava'u. This islet is kind of a here's one I prepared earlier in terms of rat eradication in Tonga. Karen is British, but has lived in Vava'u for 18 years. She founded the non-profit with 6 Tongans in 2009, and in 2016 she helped to spread rat bait here on this island by hand. Since then, her team and government staff have visited each year to check, and so far, so good.
Lots of seedlings coming up too.
Lots of seedlings coming up. That's a good sign that it's still doing very well on this island. Again,
rats
when
like
you have
eat.
Rat presence, there's very little canopy and undergrowth going on.
And so do rats eat the sort of young plants as well?
Rats can eat the seeds.
Oh, the seeds, yeah. It's not a huge area, is it? Like, we can see you can almost see through the trees the light coming through on the other side of the island.
And so we're quite close to the western side of the island. Mm. You can see the birds flying up in the canopy. Canopy's quite high here, it's 15 metres. So it's a very tall forest. You can see one or two coconut trees, and actually we can wander over to the coconut trees and just do a check and see that the nuts are not being eaten. And we're looking for telltale signs of the rat, which is a round hole in the coconut husk. And this is one of the ways we can quite quickly and effectively monitor the ongoing success of the eradication.
Oh, look at all the crabs.
Look at all the crabs. Oh, my gosh. It's like a little family all living in this one coconut husk. There's about 8 crabs in there.
sort of hurrying away from us.
Yeah. I don't blame
some
them.
Some of them are playing dead and some of them are running away.
Some of them are like, I give up. You see how big they are?
Yeah, look
and so
at them.
Much bigger than a normal hermit crab.
Yeah.
And so they'll get to a certain stage and they'll actually come out of their shell and they'll start living as a full coconut crab outside the shell.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, these are definitely baby coconut crabs.
So they just use it as a shelter when they're small.
Yeah, and protection. Oh, look at that big one down there by your
God,
foot.
Oh my God, by
my foot. Yes, there it is.
Oh, it's really hairy,
it's
like
really
a spider.
It's really dark. You see that?
Yeah.
So there you go. Now you can see, like, this one is probably ready to lose its shell soon.
It looks way too big for its shell.
Yeah, it is. Hi. Ah, and you see the difference in colour and all the hairs on its legs.
Yeah.
Okay? But once it unfolds, and I don't want to get my fingers any closer because their pincers are some of the strongest in the world and people have actually grabbed them the wrong way and ended up with some pretty bad cuts. But this is great to see all these crabs on the floor. Again, another sign of no rats. So fantastic to see.
It's almost like a chocolate brown and it's got kind of like orangey red danger signs along the edges
really
of it.
Really hairy.
Yeah, really hairy, like a tarantula, kind of the size of a tarantula.
There's a few big ones under here. Obviously liking to live under this dead tree, which is probably giving them some shelter as well as, you know, a little bit of dense habitat to live in.
That shell really looks too small for that guy.
It does. I think he's about to change. But great to see. I mean, just in this area, we've probably got 40 crabs around us.
Yeah, they're probably going to start crawling along my feet without me noticing.
Oh, you'll notice.
And so are these found on Latte as well? Is this the kind or is it a different sort?
These can be found on Latte. And as the eradication is more successful, they'll probably come back more.
Yeah.
Which will be another great indicator.
Yeah, because one of the reasons I wanted to come here was to get a kind of a glimpse of what we might see, so at least around the edges of Latte, in 5 years, 10 years, 15 years, once the rats are gone.
And I think what you'll find is a lot of, you know, right now a lot of the birds are living up in the summit, you know, and up towards the canopy. And I mean, the aim is that whole habitat of Latte can become better for all those birds. You'll start seeing the crabs and the skinks and lizards and stuff coming back in good numbers, and you'll really start to just feel a density of species around you. And I think that's key, is that it's, you know, any island, even with rats, will have one or two birds, but it's when we get rid of the rats that the bird populations can really do well.
And then when they're really doing well and you've got that critical mass of guano, then the reef's going to do well as well.
Then the reefs can do well. And as long as, you know, we continue to work and support the communities, work with the government of Tonga on their efforts for a sustainable ocean and an ocean management area, we've got a really good chance of having a great future. Watch your toes.
Yeah, that coconut crab's really coming towards me right now.
You're sounding pretty nervous there, Kate.
Yeah, well, you might be too if you had this tarantula-like pincery crab coming for your bare toes. I didn't have any shoes on because it was so rough that day. We actually had to swim ashore.
Sounds like good things in the future for Latte, though, if the eradication is successful, including for the sea around it.
Yeah, studies elsewhere in the Pacific have found that corals grow much faster around islands without rats. No rats means more seabirds, means more seabird poo fertilising the water. When the team surveyed the reef off Whanuaoneone in 2022, they found a 3% increase in coral biodiversity and health since 2017, the year after the eradication. Coral grows slowly, so that's a positive trend. And it's good news for the fish, too. Speaking to Luisi Tongia, part of the bait loading team on Latte, that's one of her hopes.
So Latte, it is a great opportunity if we remove rats. There'll be hardly any people coming in here and the population of our species will increase. And also the people, our local fishermen, especially from Wawao, they get all their mainly food resources from here.
Do they?
Yes.
Oh, they come here to
they
get
come here
fish to eat.
To get fish, the best fish, best land crabs. And hopefully that this program will, you know, increase the population for more fishermen to come.
You mean increase the fish population?
Yeah, fish species.
Like Leo, Luisi also works with the Tongan National Environment Department. She grew up with a close connection to nature and now, with kids of her own, is passionate about doing positive things for the future of Tongan wildlife.
Being here, it's really great for me and also the team back in Tonga, because Latte can be a great habitat for our native species, especially the malau. There's the other bird species, and removal of rats can also increase the bird population, our native plants. And yeah, I'm so happy to be here, to be part of that team.
The malau is a type of megapode, a very cool Turkish bird with stocky yellow legs. This particular species is only found in Tonga, where it has a really unusual way of incubating its eggs. Instead of sitting on them, it outsources the job to the warm soils of the many active volcanoes in this region. Human arrival hit the malau hard, and for a long time they were confined to just one small volcanic island. And as a safeguard, some birds were brought to a second island in Bavao in 1993, and luckily they established there. Another translocation was attempted on Latte in 1992, but it failed. Tongan officials decided not to try again until the rats were gone. But maybe soon, that time will come. At midday on the second day, the helicopter takes off with the last bait run. This last drop took place in July last year. So in a few months' time, some of the team will return to Latte to check the trail cameras and look for any signs of rats. If there are still none the year after that, the island will be declared rat-free. But by then, its recovery will already be underway.
Luisa, you got to do the last, you got to pour the last lower, did you?
It was very emotional.
Was it?
Yes. Because we are finally finishing with our second application, looking towards the future.
Yeah.
And Leo was crying.
Tell me, why were you emotional?
No, I did have choice because I like to have a good work for Tonga. It's a big part of the project and rat eradication here in Latte. I close my eyes and I have a prayer. Mm-hmm. Thanks God for give us energy to finish this job.
This episode was researched and reported by Kate Evans. Thanks to the people featured in this episode: Baudouin de Montier, Davin Mudford, Andrew Curtis, Sasha Roselli, Cecilio Fakaosi, Loisi Tongia, and Karen Stone. Voice of Tangaroa is a joint production between RNZ's Our Changing World and New Zealand Geographic. New Zealand Geographic reporting on the Voice of Tangaroa is public interest journalism funded through New Zealand On Air. You can learn more and read the articles for free at nzgeo.com/seas. Travel costs for this story were supported by the Pacific Regional Invasive Species Management Support Service. This episode was produced by Kate Evans and me, Claire Kincannon, with help from Ellen Rikers and Brianna Juritich. Thanks to senior producer Phil Vine for editing help. Sound engineering was by William Saunders, and executive producers are Tim Watkin of RNZ and James Frankham of New Zealand Geographic. Original music for this series was created by the Wellington-based group Grains. You can find them on Spotify. This is the last of our Voice of Tangaroa series. I hope you enjoyed it. If you have feedback for us, you can email ourchangingworld@rnz.co.nz. Please do continue to share the word about the series. Tell your friends and family. Tēnā koe I whakarongo mai. Thanks so much for listening. Ko Claire Kincannon aho, mā te wā. Thank you.
Hey, folks, I'm Mark Maron from the WTF Podcast, and this episode is brought to you by Kleenex Ultra Soft Tissues, your ally to help tackle your allergy symptoms this season. I love the change of seasons, but nobody loves pollen and all those other things floating in the air that make you sneeze during this nice weather. Kleenex Ultra Soft Tissues are hypoallergenic and allergist approved. So fight back against watery eyes and runny noses without worrying about irritating your skin. For this allergy season, grab Kleenex and face allergies head on.